Hello and welcome to another episode of Consumer, the European podcast of the Consumer Choice Center. As always, I'm your host, Bill Wirtz, on this episode 157 on May 16, 2024. And I'm joined today by Fabio Fernandez, another one of our regular co-hosts. Fabio, how's it going in Italy?
Howdy, Bill. Very happy to be here again with you. And everything is good in Italy. The weather is warming up, and I don't think it's as warm as where you are in Portugal. But yeah, I can't complain.
Well, currently recording out of Luxembourg, where it's not quite as warm, but you know. So if you're lusting for some rain, I think Luxembourg is just a destination to go to. We have two topics this week, and I want to get us started with the first one right away because I have been pulling up my battery health data on my iPhone, and I have some quibbles here with Apple because I've noticed that I cannot leave the house anymore without having an external battery on me. And that's not something that was a problem at the beginning. It's an iPhone 13. I've had it for 3 years, roughly. I got it when it just came out in 21. And I pull up this information, which all of the Apple users can do if you have an iPhone. And mine opens with important battery message. Your battery's health is significantly degraded. An Apple authorized service provider can replace the battery to restore full performance. And it says maximum capacity currently at 79%, which, I mean, significantly degraded at 79% is, I don't know. I mean, that we're operating on different scales here. Fabio, what is your saying? What's your experience with your phone's battery health?
So my phone is two and a half years old, and I'm at 86%. So pretty close to yours, maybe because yours is a little bit older, you'll have a couple more charges on its cycle. Maybe that's the reason yours is a little bit worse. But I find that that's a very common issue with every smartphone manufacturer, but Apple in specific. Their products last between 2.5 and 4 years. Their batteries, and then you need to replace the battery, which is very strange in the sense that batteries, of course, they have a lifespan and you need to respect that, but their hardware actually lasts much longer than the battery. So I think what consumers, and I think the point where you're coming from is the dissatisfaction with the fact that the hardware is so good and could still have a couple of years more in it, but the battery is already dying. So I think the frustration from consumers come from that point.
And we'll get into some of those frustrations. I mean, for me personally, of course, you know, when you're a freelancer, it has a tax benefit to getting myself a new phone every 3 years in Luxembourg, just writing it off over the course of 3 years. So just renewing the phone every 3 years, it just makes sense for tax purposes. But then, of course, with that battery capacity, it's hard to do a private resale of your phone. And what it incentivizes you to do is to send in your phone for the hardware used to Apple and getting a purchasing credit in return, which I've done with a MacBook before. But let's get to how a lot of people are complaining about this, because this is definitely not a new issue for Apple. This is an article from The Verge in 2017. Apple apologizes for iPhone slowdown drama, will offer $29 battery replacement for a year. And they published a letter to customers apologizing for the misunderstanding around older iPhones being slowed down. Oh, this is actually not battery related, so apologies for that. But there's some other issues here on the iPhone 14, which is the edition that a lot of people have in that sort of 2 year big renewal cycle on iPhones. iPhone 14, 14 Pro owners complain about battery capacity that's already falling off. iPhones that have been in use for less than a year are already down to 90% of their original capacity. Have you, and then Verge is asking for comments here, I see similar comments on the iPhone 15. I assume 16 will have similar problems, that it drops fairly quickly. And I wonder if you have input on this, Fabio, are we maybe just expecting a bit too much from the batteries? Because our phones are now everything from our cameras to of course, the phones, which we use an awful lot more. We have mobile data on. I mean, for most people, it's on sort of all day. A lot of apps have location services. We track each other with our phones, you know, family members having tracking on so you can see where everyone is for safety or whatever it may be. Is it that sort of we have inflated the amount of things we can do with our phones, and we have sort of unrealistic expectations about our batteries. Because I try to do all the things that preserve battery life. You know, I'll switch my mobile data off when I'm not using it. I'll close my apps here and there. I'll try and make sure location services are not on every app. But you know, what is there? Is there something realistic we could expect here?
Certainly, I think that's one of the reasons. I want to go back to the article that you mentioned because it's from 2017, and I'm pretty familiar with that case. In that particular instance, not only the batteries were dying real quick, but also to mitigate the problem. So what Apple was doing was actually limiting the amount of power that you could pull out of the hardware, because when you have more use of your phone, so the hardware is working harder, it means that you have more battery consumption. So what they did, they limited the iPhones without being transparent with the customers about that. So that was the big issue back then. Since then, the Apple have done that in the past and communicated for consumers. I think the point right now is we are also seeing in Europe a changing legislation. So the European Parliament wants every battery in every smartphone to be replaceable, and that consumers can do that by themselves pretty simply. And they want that by 2027. And that discussion brings me back to when I had like those old flip phones and you could replace the battery, and the batteries were actually really easy to take it off. But I also remember that that time phones didn't do much. I think the camera was the biggest thing that the mobile phones did at that time. And you usually turned them off during the night because you didn't use your phone, or you didn't want anyone calling you at your mobile phone because you had your house phone. Nowadays, people don't usually have a fixed line anymore. We don't have phones at our houses. Smartphone is more than a telephone. People basically don't call anymore. They text. They do so many other functions with their smartphone, and the smartphone is on all the time. So I think what manufacturers are trying to do to make the battery long stand those issues is try to optimize with software, trying to reduce the processor and reducing the processing during the times that we basically don't use our phone. So usually during the night, on when you have your rest system turned on, different companies call that differently. Apple calls that one thing, and then Galaxy phones, or Samsung phones, have a different name. But basically, when you put your phone in like low data mode or low or rest mode or something like that, you try using software to optimize the battery. So it's a problem that we're going to have to face because phones are getting smaller. Batteries are trying to be very thin and be packed into very small devices. The challenge now with this new legislation in Europe is how you're going to place those batteries to make them replaceable. So the good thing about non-replaceable batteries, so the smartphones that we have right nowadays, is that they are IP compliant, which means that they are dust and water resistant because they are sealed inside. And also you can shape the battery in any format that you want. So if you take on, if you open an iPhone or any other smartphone nowadays, you can see that maybe they have a L shape or maybe a weird shape that is not easy to replace like the old cell phones. And the reason for that is because they are optimizing every space inside of the smartphone to give you the biggest battery possible, so the battery will last longer. That is going to be a downgrade, I would say, for consumers, because manufacturers won't be able to use all the space available. They will have to make a standardized battery. And also the size of the battery, you will see that changes every year with every model and every manufacturer. So even Apple, one year they have a 5,000 milliampere battery. The next year they have a 6,000. The other year maybe they reduce to 4 and 800. So that changes every year as well. And so I don't know how they're going to make a standard battery that you can change and replace in Europe to follow those legislations. But in practical terms, what you can do to make your battery last longer is just to reduce the amount of charges. So if you don't drain the battery almost entirely. So if you don't get to 20% or 15% of your battery, don't charge in between those long charges. And nowadays you can charge to fully or 100% complete because you're not actually charging to 100%. So a couple of years ago, there was this thing that people said, oh, don't charge your iPhone or your mobile phone until 100% because that makes a problem with the battery, because the battery gets accustomed to those kind of charges and then overpowers the battery. So it's better to get to 80%. So what manufacturers did is when you get to 80% or 90% of the battery, they actually show to you 100%. So the user thinks that it's full, but the battery is being optimized. So there are so many ways that the manufacturers are trying to optimize. So I would say use the whole battery and then charge it again. So don't do intermediary charges. Also, fast charging is really detrimental for batteries. It's better to do long charges, like overnight, leave there your smartphone charging instead of doing like 20 minutes, 45 minutes supercharge that can get your battery really high. But that also warms up the battery and might be detrimental for the life of your cell phone. So those are a couple of tricks that I would say. And I'm curious to see, and what is your opinion on how this legislation is going to go? Because there are so many ways that the manufacturers can try to solve that issue. And I don't really quite know how the route that are going to take to solve that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where I feel like there's also going to be people trying to make alternative batteries then as well, because if it's a replaceable battery, then somebody could figure out how to make, you know, a cheaper battery, and then it's going to be in, and that might be a safety issue as well, which we had in the past with, I think it was Samsung Galaxy, there was a battery problem that caused the phone to start I think smoking on the planes. So I mean, just imagine, you know, people trying to make their own batteries there. I mean, I remember a time, as you mentioned earlier, Zach, with the original flip phones and just smaller Nokia 3310s, where you technically could have a second battery in your pocket to replace it with, but you didn't really need that because you charge your phone, I mean, once every 4 days if you were using it extensively. I mean, once a week for when I had one of those. Also served very well as a bottle opener. Don't do that with your current iPhone. But yeah, so that really has changed, and sort of the charging habits is also something that I wish I could just do the overnight charge, but I don't get that far anymore with the extensive use of my phone, especially if you're on the road. It's just not an option anymore. And I think, you know, just what I said earlier on the resale value, if I bought a used phone, I would really think twice about it, because, you know, it's like if somebody's already been using it for 3 years, then there's only so much you're going to get out of your phone, and then you're just going to be having it on an external battery all the time. I also pulled up some tips and tricks for optimizing your battery, and that I could find online. So troubleshooting, this is specifically for iPhone 15, but I think it applies to others as well. Optimize app settings and background activity. This is something you can actually check out in your settings, which app is actually draining your battery the most, is using the most of your processing power. I found out that Twitter and Telegram are very bad offenders when it comes to this. So that's something to keep an eye on, like just, you know, the once in a while swiping away all your active apps is actually something that, for some reason, Apple is not making very easy. I know that, I think when my old Android devices, there was a way to close all the apps you had currently open. But iPhone makes you still like do the little twirly swipe with both thumbs to close all of them, unless you know a different way to do it, Fabio. Update your iOS regularly. Of course, that's something you should do for security reasons. Anyway, check for and close unnecessary background apps. Already did that. Adjust screen brightness and timeout settings. Now, screen brightness is one of those things that people really do underestimate. I mean, it's not good for your eyes for it to be too bright in the first place, but also does take a lot of your battery. Disable unnecessary location services. Quite a lot of apps want my location, where I just don't see the point of it. I mean, if it's the Miles and More app wanting to have my location just to give me offers on how to use my miles for a watch or a phone, I don't think that should have my location. So you can play around with that as well. Monitor and manage push notifications. So push notifications, especially if you're a vibration notification user. I mean, I noticed that on the Apple Watch. It's like if you get a lot of notifications, your Apple Watch drains a lot faster because that is, of course, a movement the watch needs to do and uses battery. Review and reset network settings. I don't really know what that is all about. I mean, is it for how many networks that your phone tries to connect to, whether it tries to connect to all types of Wi-Fi systems? I'm not sure if what that's related to. And well, of course, evaluate and replace a faulty battery. Well, I mean, sure, you can always replace it. But I remember my grandmother was using an old iPhone 8, and we got that replaced for her. And I think that cost about 70 euros. So it's not exactly cheap to get that done. And on top of that, you gotta wait, because it's not one of those things that they just do within 20 minutes. It's like you gotta either send it in or bring it in and then take it back the next week or so. It's a pretty difficult process, because Apple, by virtue of trying you not to be able to do it, gives it to official manufacturers that can do it, and they need to be super careful, because if they just do something wrong, I think there's some sort of a trigger system that can kill the phone in order to prevent consumers from being able to do it. There's a lot of gatekeeping there in Apple's phones, and I'm not sure how Android devices compare to that, whether it is fully a software issue or if Samsung's outperforming. I haven't been using Samsung for quite a long time, but I don't hear Android users complain to such an extent. So maybe there's a competitive disadvantage there for Apple that they probably need to work on, because the more features you add to it, I mean, it's like that's always the hardware versus software problem, right? The software people want to add every available service in the world, and then the hardware people have to figure out how to actually make it work. I don't know. I'm because of this ecosystem, and we talked about this before, I don't think I'm going to be moving away from Apple anytime soon, because too many devices are at this point connected. But it's one of those drops into your water glass, where eventually, you know, if the battery performance is not up to the standard that I expect, and you know, consumers might move away. I might move away myself as well. I don't know. You're still an Apple loyalist yourself, Fabio, or have you been switching it up? Have you been cheating on Apple with alternative headphones or any of the sort?
No, not yet. I've been browsing, but I haven't changed it. I haven't made the change. But I think it will depend on the new models. I think they haven't been so innovative as they have been in the past. So I'm kind of disappointed on that. And as I said, because of this new legislation to get to have replaceable batteries, I don't know what would be the solution. So the legislation is so absurd that Apple could just remove the battery entirely, send you an iPhone with a cable and a power bank, and that would count as replaceable battery. So I think that's shows the absurdity of this law. So I'm really curious to see what they're going to do in terms of presenting iPhone that has replaceable batteries.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that are usually legislation written by people who don't really know how any of this works. I mean, not that I really do. I mean, when my phone breaks, I bring it to the magic phone guy, or I buy a new one. I don't really understand what I'm carrying around in the supercomputer in my pocket. But let's make a switch here to another topic. Speaking of supercomputers, this is beautiful transition I did there. And that is all the AI is back in action. I feel like every 2 months or 3 months or so, I'll open Twitter and there will be a video of an impressive new way of the latest GPT, whatever, 0.5, 5.6.0, or wherever we're at. And some of the stuff I've been seeing lately is fairly impressive. I mean, some of the listeners here will have seen the video of somebody, a child being taught by the latest ChatGPT version to learn mathematics. A lot of memes about the very soothing voice on the new version. I've also seen the video by Google where you can hold up your phone and ask Gemini to describe what it sees, or even pointing at code and tell me what is this code for. I mean, it's pretty impressive, some of these new features. But what's also very interesting is some of the ideas that the people in charge of these models have. And I know, Fabio, you send me this piece about Sam Altman and sort of a universal basic income idea that he floundered on a podcast. Can you tell us a bit about what his latest idea was there?
Yeah, sure. So I just want to go back a little bit and talk about those new developments in artificial intelligence. So this week we had two launches. Basically, Google launched Veo, which is VEO, which is a video generative tool, which means that you can input text and it's going to output some kind of video for you. And the quality of the video is getting so good that I think pretty soon we can maybe trust on those services to produce B-rolls, produce a lot of different content, especially for content creators, companies, marketing companies, agencies. There's a lot of usability for those kind of things. And you don't have to pay royalty. You don't have to hire someone to record the video for you, go shoot the video outside. So there's a lot of saving and good things coming from those services. And also, ChatGPT announced the 4.0 version, which is ChatGPT 4. Basically, what they are launching now, it's an Omni model, which means that you can input text, image, or video, and also speech, and then the output of that is a conversation with the model and almost like a walkthrough that it can explain to you what's happening. So you can do the same way that Google Gemini does, what you can point your camera at something and ask them to describe. But you can also write on a paper kind of a mathematical equation, and you can, with your phone recording, show the equation, and the AI model can help you solve that equation by telling you, okay, so now you eliminate the x, you move the x to the left, and then you subtract from that side, and it can help you solve that issue, which is super cool if you think about like kids learning math, or if you're trying to change a tire and you don't know how to change a car tire, you can just show the video and say, okay, so I'm changing the tire. What I need to do first? So there's so many applications in terms of learning and problem solving that I think that is super cool. One of the things that I noticed is that they had a couple of mishaps during the presentation, things that they asked the AI model and it didn't quite understand. So one of the moments they are shooting a selfie, kind of showing himself, and the AI model was saying, okay, so now I see a piece of wood. And then the person said, no, the piece of wood I showed you before, now I'm showing you my face. And then the AI model said, okay, oh, and I see, yeah, that makes more sense. So you kind of have those mishaps, which kind of, for me, affects the credibility of the service. So for me to trust that as an assistant, it needs to be like pitch perfect. It needs to be perfect all the time, solve my issues, not make mistakes. And I think we're almost there, but not quite. And also something that I noticed, I don't know if it's just me, but maybe the listeners also have that impression. The AI model is much better now. It's more natural in terms of speaking, and it sounds more natural, but it's also a little bit flirty. So they try to give that flirtiness to the AI model, which was a woman talking to a man, the person in this on the stage. So I thought that was a little bit weird, or something that I wasn't expecting from the model. But I think it's all of that. It's pretty cool. So I wanted to say that before, because I think we're heading to a super cool place. So the point where I disagree with Sam Altman, which is the CEO from ChatGPT, and then the piece, the article that I shared with you, is because he wants to create something similar to universal basic income, which is calling universal basic compute. So just to explain a little bit to your listeners, the UBI, so Universal Basic Income, is something that we already discussed here on the podcast. It's basically giving or handing out money to people just because they exist, so no other reason. So everybody gets a share, and that's your basic income. So that will help you keep the economy active. That is something that they are particularly trying to do on developed countries, because there are a lot of works that people don't want to do anymore, and then economies are dying. People are having less babies, so the economy is also not growing because of that. So they want to give more money to people so they can spend more money and then keeps the economy growing. So what we know about UBI is that the economy, the way that is created right now, capitalism, free market, it's based on merit, it's based on productivity, it's based on creation of value. So if you hand out money up to everyone without any discrepancy or just because they exist, what you're doing actually is reducing the value of money. You're creating inflation, you're increasing the cost of living, you're putting more money into the market, which means that money is not scarce, and things that are not scarce, they lose value. And what's so the whole idea, the whole concept economically, already doesn't work with, if you're handing out money. So what Sam Altman is trying to do right now is try to create a UBC. So he thinks, and I disagree with him on the premise. I think the premise is completely wrong. The premise that he's using is that computational power, so sharing or having access to compute power in the future is going to be so important that it's going to be more valuable than money, because you can not only do things for yourself, you can have your assistant, you can use the ChatGPT, all the models to do things for yourself, but you can also sell your computational power to someone who needs, or you can put your computational power to do something for you that generates money. So you can actually hire to do tasks that you don't want to do, but generates income for you. So he thinks that by giving people a little bit of allocation in terms of computing, that is going to be more valuable than money in the future. And that's what we should be looking into. The whole idea is preposterous, because that would mean that taxpayers need to pay for that. And as I said to you, it's basically like putting lipstick into a pig. So the pig is UBI, which we already know that doesn't work. And they are trying to make it, okay, so how this is going to be beneficial for my industry, which is AI. Okay, let's try to give compute processing power to people for free, which would be as idiotic as Amazon creating like a UBA and you have like free shipping every month. And then because it's universal basic shipping, everybody's going to be shipping in the future. Nobody's going to go out to a store and buy something. So now Amazon would be advocating to have like free shipping to everybody, like four shipping a month. That's your basic shipping allowance every month. So the whole idea is idiotic for me. But I like the way that this technology is heading. So I don't know if that makes clear my opinion and my position on this topic.
I think it's super, super interesting, because, you know, if you think about sort of the tasks you could have it perform. But then again, I mean, if you look at sort of where we're at right now, I mean, something that comes to mind when you were talking about this is that there's these apps that allow you to mine Bitcoin, for instance, and essentially you just run it on your phone, you're spending the electricity that you paid for, and so then you get a commission basically on what you mine. There's apps that do that. But you were still like invested, right? I mean, because you bought you pay for the electricity, you paid for the device. And in this case, I mean, it's like if you use your devices to perform tasks and then sell those at a profit, then it's still you invested into that in the first place. So why not have those companies do that in the first place? And also the fact that, you know, that taxpayers would be paying for this ultimately. It's a different way of doing redistribution. I feel like UBI and
in the case of cryptocurrency, what is value, what has value in all those mining things is the cryptocurrency itself is Bitcoin. Bitcoin has value because it's scarce. Not because everybody has processing power to mine Bitcoin, but because mining doesn't get you as much as Bitcoin as it did in the past. So that's the scarcity. That's what has value. Because if everyone has processing power and can do it by themselves, and so what is the value in that? And if it's free for everybody, we're not generating wealth and we're not generating anything. So the productivity might increase, but that doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to be well off or wealthier because of that.
It feels like to me that the people like Sam Altman are doing the Bill Gates move just a bit too quickly. It's like Bill Gates first made a lot of money and then later decided to retire and become, you know, like
a philanthropist.
And I think Sam Altman wants to do everything all at once by, you know, as he's already probably a billionaire and will be even richer in the future, that he already wants to sort of this apologetic, like, I've made too much money, now I feel bad for myself. But then what you were saying sort of about the technology, and I think this is where it gets so interesting. By the way, my theory on the flirtatiousness of the voice, because I didn't want to get into this, I think sci-fi movies are to blame, because every single sci-fi AI voice that was helping was always an attractive sounding woman. And I think this is what they went for with this one. And given the generation of content as a result of that, I think that has just done the advertising for them. And you think Google went in a slightly different direction, or maybe will. I mean, there will be different voices available, and I'm kind of curious what they will sound like in different languages. I think when you now look at sort of how this is a threat to different industries. I mean, people were making a lot of points on Twitter about Duolingo and how Duolingo will really suffer from sort of the capability of ChatGPT teaching you languages and what that means for some of these other apps, which is which is you know, is sort of reminiscent of the scan to PDF app that went bankrupt after Apple integrated that into Notes. It's one of those things that, you know, there might be a lot of consolidation of services in the same way our phones have done that. And if you now integrate all of these services into your existing supercomputer that is your phone, well, it might drain your battery even more, but on the other hand, it will also provide you with all these incredible resources. I mean, some of the stuff you see is just phenomenal, and it's moving at such a fast pace. But I am curious, though. You mentioned some of the bugs, and one of the problems of the earlier language learning models was that they got stupider because of the input from people. And I'm sort of curious if this is something that with Google's video feature could also become a problem. If people sarcastically try to mislead the model and if it feeds on itself, could it become worse over time? I know this was a problem in the past. I'm not sure if they fixed that. But it's incredibly exciting right now to see it. I mean, just the imagining, you know, the Google glasses were an idea of the past. They might come back at a much improved version. I can see the advantages for people with disabilities, for instance, just like speech recognition. If you're deaf, that you just would have subtitles for everyone. I mean, we're on a very exciting phase here. It's hard to sort of explain how incredible this is. But do you know anything about the rollout, though? Because we've seen these demos, but when is this actually going to be available? And is it going to cost us money to use this? And will we have to subscribe for a lot of money to use these? Or are they going to be free of charge for consumers to use? Has there anything been said about that?
Yeah, so both models are available right now. So even Google Veo is already available. And also ChatGPT 4.0 is already available for subscribers. So they are releasing that right now. But all the other things that I mentioned, the UBC, it's something that they plan when ChatGPT reaches ChatGPT 7.0. So it's really in the future, maybe a couple of years from us right now. But those new improvements, which are really big and really cool, for example, the Google Veo kind of video creator or video output, it keeps perspective really well, which was something that was a problem in the past. And also the Omni input for ChatGPT, I think also it's super cool. The video feature that I mentioned, I think that's super cool, especially for learning, but also speech is much more accurate and improved. So different ways to interact with AI, I think that's already a step up and a very welcome step up for consumers to use those new features. And it's available and reasonably priced, I would say, because it's keeping the same price that it was before and adding a lot of new features. Also because the price of computing processing goes down over time. So it's a basic law of computing. So it's natural that new features will be added and the price would be relatively stable at the point in the future where it goes a little bit down and gets cheaper.
Right. Well, in any case, we'll have to wrap it up here. But I think the conclusion is, Apple, your batteries currently suck. You got to work on this. We agree that when you lobbied against those battery directives, we agree that's going to be silly and it's going to add a lot of problems. So that's not entirely your fault, Apple. Great job on Google and OpenAI on those new models, but UBC, we're not a fan. So I think that wraps it up. Fabio, where can people find you online and see more of your stuff?
They can go to Twitter or X right now, which is De Faria e Silva. I probably have a link in the description right here. And if they have any questions, they can shoot me right there.
Fantastic. Well, Fabio, thank you so much for co-hosting the episode with us today. And I'll hear all of the listeners back on Thursday next week. And in the meantime, follow us on also the social media channels at Consumer Choice C on X and Instagram and Telegram channels and wherever you feel like following us. For those left over on Facebook, we're also still on Facebook, so good to check that out as well. So thank you so much, Fabio, and see you soon.
Thank you, Bill.